in our Pakistani community, there's this whole issue of like someone who lives in the West is a burger and will never understand what being a Pakistani is, and then someone who comes from Pakistan is a fob and will never understand what the Western life is. What are we doing? Like, what is? Yeah, I like burgers. Like, call me a burger, whatever. But if you're dismissing me based on the fact that I live in a different place, but I was born in Pakistan. Like, I am Pakistani. Like, just because my accent isn't that great in Urdu, and you know, I don't know the words, it doesn't mean that I'm not Pakistani, and you can't dismiss me for that.
Welcome back to another episode of PopCord. In today's episode, our guest is Adil Khan from Calgary, Canada. Adil also runs a podcast of his own called Muslim People Problems with a friend of his. Adil will be talking about the MSA, or the Muslim Student Association. Almost every Muslim in North America has heard of the MSA, but for those of you who live outside of the US or Canada, MSA stands for Muslim Student Association. It's a religious organization meant for universities with chapters all across the US and Canada. Many major universities already have an MSA chapter today. Typically, the MSA will have a private space or a building in the university where Muslim students can come together to pray and to hold events. So, once again, Adil lives in Calgary, Canada, and he has served as a president of the MSA at his university. So today he'll share a few stories of his time throughout that journey as president, and also some of the challenges that he saw within the Muslim community in his area. So here's the deal.
Okay, so yeah, I was born in Karachi, Pakistan, and lived there for around 4 years. So till I was four, moved to Doha, Qatar, which is like in the Middle East. It's kind of close to Dubai, and lived there for 7 years. So most of my young conscious life was spent there.
And you've been living in Calgary since when?
So I've been in Calgary since, I believe, 2012. So end of 2012, I moved to Calgary from Mississauga, Ontario. And so it was basically grade 12 for me, last year of high school. And I spent most of my middle school and high school life in Mississauga before coming to Calgary. So moving to Calgary was a very big change for me because I didn't really have any friends here. And it was like kind of the end of your high school career. And it's just like people already had their cliques going on. And so I was kind of like a loner, kind of like just, you know, staying by myself. Or the part of Calgary where I live, there's not that many Pakistanis.
Yeah.
So there's actually not that many ethnic people in general. There's mostly just white people. I live in the Southwest. So it is pretty far away from the brown community, which is in the Northeast.
Yeah.
So it was kind of secluded.
And then you started going to university there as well, right around that area.
Yeah. I'm about to graduate in April of this year, 2019.
Cool.
After that, I took a year off and just kind of worked at Best Buy, which is like a retail store for electronics, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do in university. And when I did get into university, even then I was in open studies, which is like a open kind of like elective program where you can choose your program afterwards. And so now I'm in the business program doing a major in marketing.
Yeah.
And I'm about to graduate in April, inshallah.
Oh, okay. Marketing. Got it. That's cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense. How is, university life up there? You said there wasn't a big Muslim / ethnic community in the place that you grew up. Was it any different in the university?
Well, the corner of the city where I live, that's the place where there's not that many ethnic people. But my university is pretty diverse. So I go to Mount Royal University. And so that's like, there's two universities in Calgary. There's University of Calgary and Mount Royal University. So I go to the lesser one in some people's views, but I like it. It's a smaller community and it's a new university. So it used to be a college. I don't know if you know how these processes work, but usually colleges do turn into universities if they are popular. So the only thing I have to compare it to is in Ontario, the sheer amount of universities that are there and that's just the volume of people that are there It's not comparable to here for sure. It is on a much smaller scale. So the communities are pretty tight knit and like, you do kind of recognize faces. Whereas in Ontario, in Mississauga, especially, or in Toronto, you won't know the same people year over year or even week over week, you know.
What do you prefer though, if you had a, if you could go back and had a preference, for example, between going to a smaller university where you can, you know, form smaller networks and get to know people a little better, or a just a huge university with a lot more potential opportunities? What would you lean with?
I wouldn't change anything, to be honest. I think my university and the way I've been even handed opportunities, I wouldn't be able to get those opportunities or even come close to those opportunities in a bigger university.
Yeah.
Kind of get lost in the sauce or, you know, like just be part of the statistic at that point. But over here, we can actually do things and make changes to the university even. So I'll dive deeper into that later on. But yeah, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay. Yeah, that worked out perfectly for you. The university that I went to was in the middle of nowhere, basically, in Connecticut. I've mentioned this to some of my friends before, but we it was really out there, right? And I actually really wanted to turn back the clock and go to a city university. And the main reason was my university wasn't quite diverse. It was really hard to find things to do. There was an MSA and stuff, but the average kids either used to go home over the weekends or there was a huge party culture. And I found it hard to kind of find my spot on campus, at least. So that was a huge challenge.
Especially in an age where you actually don't really know what you want. It's kind of hard to have those like dichotomies of partying and then, you know, just pure religion and people leaving. So you don't really have the middle ground of, you know, let's just hang out. Let's just figure out what we want to do or stuff like that.
Yeah. I found this happening a lot. I don't know if you can relate. I found a lot of Muslims, and of course, specifically Pakistanis on campus, kind of also struggling, I guess, to find their spot. And some of them would resort to either getting closer to but kind of adopt partying and some really bad habits that go along with that.
Yeah. I mean, even myself, like I'm not a perfect person and I haven't done, I haven't made the best decisions in my life. And even, just by knowing that I've been MSA president, it kind of gives off a vibe of this guy might think certain things, but I have seen both sides of the coin. And, you know, people do make these boxes in their head of like, if I'm this, I can't be that. If I'm that, I can't be this. And I found that in my life, a lot of the times religion was associated with people judging me or, you know, Allah thinks I'm bad, so what's the point of doing good? Or you know, all these things that weigh upon us at those impressionable ages. It's not that easy to navigate, you know, life when there's so much pressure from either side, right?
Yeah.
And those sides just exist in your head, really. So that's what I've learned is, you know, you can't really blame anyone for being in the place that they are. Wherever they are.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't know why I found that other people had an easier time kind of picking a side and just going with it. So you either become a more practicing Muslim and get closer to the, you know, the small circle of Muslims on campus, or you just completely go the other way and start enjoying the more fun parts, what have you, of college life, right? I really struggled because, like you, I would say I was kind of in the middle. So I would kind of mix in with a little bit of both. Yeah, it was difficult in that type of environment.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to understand that we all are going to sin and there's no way out of it. But understanding that, like the understanding of God at that age is so up and down and you don't really, like even now, I'm still grasping with different concepts and like trying to justify things in my head. And, you know, it's an ongoing struggle for sure. Especially living in the West where you don't really, you're not forced into the religion technically. Like you are in a way by your family, but you do have the choice of outwardly practicing it or not. Whereas in Pakistan or like other places, in like in Qatar when I lived there, like you don't really know of the other option. Like it's not really visibly there unless you're actually seeking it out.
That's very true.
It is kind of hard to live in the gray.
Yeah. So you've been a president of the MSA, and I'll ask you to kind of elaborate on that as well. But basically, even while being so, I guess, having such an authority in that association in your campus, that doesn't necessarily put you as a, you know, perfect representative of Muslims or somebody to answer, you know, all the questions to Muslims and non-Muslims about their religion.
100%.
At the end of the day, you're still a student.
Even I would even question some of our, you know, religious leaders. Are they a representative of Islam from your point of view? Like, these questions are really important for all of us to not just see Islam as a box. Like, it is a spectrum. Like, there's people from all walks of life that partake in Islam. It's whether we recognize them or not as people who are in powerful positions. Like, so rewinding a bit from the MSA presidency, I'll tell you where it all started from.
Yeah, good idea.
So basically, the first 1.5 year of university, I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't really, like, it was still, I was still new to Calgary. I didn't really have any friends. And I was a pretty shy kid, right? And I didn't want to put myself out there, really. But in my second year, I made a decision to, you know, get more involved and seek out these friends, because I saw how tight-knit the MSA was at the University of Calgary.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was spending some time with some friends there, but I decided, you know, like, I'm already on campus. Why don't I try to make the best of it and find a community here? So when I first joined the MSA, there wasn't really much structure. There wasn't much going on in terms of events or even like some religious gatherings were kind of impromptu. Like, Jummah prayer would be on some Fridays and not on some Fridays. So it wasn't really consistent. And so I was really passionate, you know, about this newfound community and building something like it. And so I approached, you know, the president at the time and the community, which was about, I think, five or 10 brothers, basically, who were in charge and were part of the community as well. And I asked them, you know, like, I want to be more involved and, you know, help make this bigger than what it is and, you know, affect people in the way that I have been affected, feeling connected to a community and understanding God and all these great things that I found at the University of Calgary.
Yeah.
And so they let me into the MSA. Basically, you could call it the committee or the board or whatever you want to call it, but the people on the inside creating those events. And the president at the time didn't really want to continue, so he passed it on to me as the next president. So I started that semester, you know, with basically those few brothers, and then we started recruiting more volunteers. And I really wanted to have that community aspect of inclusivity.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting anyone who wants to be involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter your age, gender, sex, sexual orientation, sexual preference, like whatever it is. If you want to be closer to Islam, who am I to say that you can't be closer to Islam or be part of this community that you want to be a part of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So when we first created, that was the vision. And so, you know, me and a couple of our board members, one of my really close friends, Hadil, was a part of that as well. We actually had a podcast for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called Muslim People Problems. We started that a bit after the MSA. So I'll actually get into that afterwards, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Just following the timeline.
No problem.
Yeah, so with the MSA, so that's what we wanted to be. That was a vision. And in the first year, I think we did achieve that vision because, you know, half of our board was women. Mm-hmm. You know, we were having events on a continuous basis. And this is all attributed to the community, you know, like, these things only happen when people want them to happen. So we had, you know, potlucks geared towards these religious events. Like, it wasn't just we're fasting to fast. It was like, oh, we're going to have this potluck at the end of this fast that we're going to have, and we're going to bring on non-Muslims to this event. And so we had a potluck, an iftar potluck, which had around 75 attendees who were from all different walks of life. And, you know, they came to learn about Islam in a way, because they were obviously they wanted the free food, that's for sure, but they, you know, but they did want to learn, and they gave us a chance to speak about it, so that was pretty awesome. We had charity week, you know, we raised around $2,000 for Islamic Relief that year, and it was all really like out of a fairy tale in a way, because it was like, you know, we've created this such a great thing. We even filed a report to have ablution stations, so wudu stations on campus. Wow. Because we already had a meditation space,
right?
And although it wasn't built during, it didn't get built during that year, this past year it actually did get built. So
wow,
all that passion and drive actually went to real change with on campus, you know, institutional change, which is pretty awesome.
Right.
And in terms of like wudu stations, it wasn't just to like, oh, we're gonna, we pray, so we need something to make wudu with. No, it was because we were using bathrooms which became unsafe because there was water everywhere, and you know, when you have just hand dryers, there's no way to dry the place. So that was the argument we brought up with the campus, and they agreed. So
yeah,
sometimes it isn't just for selfish purposes that we need institutional change. It's actually for health reasons or safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many people were, I guess, with you when you started this MSA?
So at that time, when we were basically starting from scratch, it was at my first MSA meeting, it was me and Hadil. So okay. So we were the first two people on the board, volunteering, recruiting volunteers. So that was two people. And then at the end of that year, we had around 200 members.
Mm-hmm.
So 200 active members and around 6 to 8 board members. So it was a huge amount of growth.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, we did this thing and it was because of us, but it was actually because the community wanted to get involved. We just gave them access to getting involved. Mm-hmm. You know, women did want to be a part of the conversation. Women did want to give their input. We just made it possible for them to.
You just put a structure in place.
Exactly. As opposed to like, oh, what do you guys think we should do? And keeping that conversation close to just brothers. We opened it up to anyone and everyone, you know, tell us what we can do. We're here to serve the community. You know, tell us what you need. And if you want to do something, come on board, you know, take on this initiative that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah, regarding the wudu comment that you mentioned, I think I was actually listening to an episode of your podcast. And in there, you guys were talking about something that really resonated to me as well. The fact that when you're doing wudu, especially on traditional sinks, and the water is just flying everywhere and the hair is coming and the hair is getting mixed with the water and the boogers and everything. So I completely agreed with that, with what your colleague said on the that podcast. It's better to get something that's been tried and tested.
Even when you try to make a light wudu, it's not like still water like everywhere over the sink, and it's not avoidable, right? In some cases.
Yeah. I mean, I would even say to the point that even those professional, I don't know what those are called, but the real wudu ablution stations, they're barely cutting it, but they're a lot more manageable and a lot easier to clean. So it makes sense.
Yeah. And hey, that when it's a dedicated space, you know, it's our problem. You know, our people are supposed to keep it clean. It is our issue. We shouldn't be ashamed of making wudu. Obviously not.
Of course not.
But we should also be considerate of other people. Mm-hmm. You know, other people don't put their feet in the sink. That's for sure. and you know, if you are doing that, don't be ashamed of it. But also be courteous to the next person, right? Like you have to wipe down certain things. Like you have to make it usable for the next person.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah. Not to mention, I've seen people do wudu in public places. Let's say, I don't know if I've seen somebody do it in McDonald's, but I've seen places like that. And I would almost feel to the point that you're actually getting dirtier by doing wudu in those types of sinks, by putting your feet in there and whatnot. It really grossed me out. But, you know, people are dedicated, man.
If that's what you have to resort to, that's what you have to resort to.
That's what you got
to
do. Yeah.
You have to clean up after yourself for sure. So the first year was fine and dandy, great, and we ended the year with a bang with like our end of year dinner, and it was really good and heartwarming for me to see this community being built, and you know, it was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
what I failed to realize was that, like, I am a man in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so certain things that were happening were because a man was speaking. And so the next year when we were going into the new year, I was still president at the time. We did try to pass it on to other people, but they got a bit busy and things happen. Like, people have responsibilities that are outside of the community, and sometimes it happens where, you know, someone gets elected and they have to work, or they have to do this and they have to do that. So it was like a back and forth for like a semester, and then we did kind of regroup, and there was a really good core team that we had with this one girl. I won't say her name because I don't have permission from her yet, but so she was the best prospect for taking on presidency next. And so when I was stepping down, I gave it to the best person who was fit for the job. And that was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't wear hijab. And she, to some people, she didn't represent Islam, right? Some people were pissed off about a woman not wearing hijab and you know, representing the Muslim Students Association and the role of president. And now, to me, a role of president is really superficial. I never cared about the role itself. I wanted to do the work. I didn't care whether I was communications, whether I was even just a volunteer. I was going to do the work regardless. And she was the same way. She got us on the news on World Hijab Day. A girl that doesn't wear hijab.
Ironic.
Got that Muslim Students Association.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so who is the better representation of Islam? Like, me or a woman that doesn't wear hijab? When you clearly can't see if I'm wearing hijab or not, how I think or not, right? And so this double standard it still is in place. But basically, when it was passed down to her, people got pissed off. She got death threats. She got harassed.
Oh no!
And, you know, we had like, and she was Pakistani as well. And when they wanted elections, like, this is basically mostly men who had an issue with this.
Right.
And to add to that, men who weren't really involved that much in the community, they weren't really involved in tying the community together. It was more of like a superficial thing, like, oh yeah, I'm part of MSA, or yeah, like, this is my Muslim badge, or whatever it was, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's really shocking. You're mentioning death threats. That's extreme.
Yeah, it sounds extreme, but it's a reality, right? Like, this is what women face all around the world for speaking up.
Yeah, right. Or holding anything that makes some people feel inferior because they believe that women aren't supposed to be leaders or whatnot.
Yeah, mostly men.
Yeah,
mostly men who. It hurts their egos. I wouldn't exclude myself from that as well. Like, I feel like we're all in this together, and the more division we do create, it works against us. You know, going back to the first thing we talked about, like the two sides of, like, someone who's going the opposite way of religion and someone who's like really, really religious. And, you know, we fail to see the person. We just see their actions, or we just, you know, judge them for what we think they are, and that's really unfortunate. So anyways, when that did happen, you know, it really opened my eyes to how a few people can really destroy, like, really destroy a community in terms of you know, people, women even feeling unsafe to be in the community, you know.
And would you call these few people, basically they're a vocal minority, right? They're just a very loud group of people, but in reality they're a small portion. So it wasn't like a majority opinion that this girl was not fit to be a president.
And the reason why the vocal minority was seen as a majority or was taken so seriously was because nobody else stood up. You know, nobody else. I didn't see anyone else from the Pakistani community step up and say, you know, she's just as Muslim as you are, I'm just as Muslim as she is. And, you know, we are all representatives of each other.
Get over it.
We're all in this together. So I feel like when you don't stand up for other people's rights, you're also taking the stance of the oppressor. You're also taking the stance of a vocal minority. It's the same thing with Trump, right? Like, when Trump says something and white people don't say anything about it, you know, you're part of that problem. even though you might say you're not, you are.
And you know, Adil, I'm not sure if you'll agree with this. I wish there was a woman here to actually back this up or state her opinion on this. But what I find really interesting is in this particular topic about hijab, when you brought up hijab, right?
Yeah.
I find it hard to kind of take a side on this. So there is a liberal Western point of view that kind of predominates in some of these societies here that says basically the hijab or anything similar to it, a scarf or anything, is a symbol of oppression, which is ridiculous in my mind. But then on the opposite side, we're having a subset of people in our communities that are saying the lack of hijab or lack of clothing is just scandalous or some other negative, you know, synonym for that. So why not just let the women choose at the end of the day what they want to do?
That's what I say. There's been women in our community who have taken off hijab and they have to leave the community because they don't have an option, you know? Like when you take off, so to some people, you're taking off your religion, which is really such a superficial thing. Like a physical scarf does not represent how Muslim you are. And people don't understand that, and it's not just a thought process. It's not just like us men when we don't say something or when we take a step back and say, you know, I have this stance on hijab, on women's hijab. What does that do for women? You know, you don't understand as a man the repercussions that has on a woman who is just trying to be herself, just like you are being yourself. You're not a perfect guy,
right?
Why are you imposing this when you say there is no compulsion in religion? Why are you imposing this belief onto someone else?
I find it really strange that we often in other situations we have to be on the defense, right? We use those same tactics to kind of attack people at different angles. So instead of learning from I guess the types of things that people attack us for, we often end up using those same weapons.
Yeah.
And who gets caught in the middle is the victim, in this case of the women, who actually have to make a choice whether what they want to wear or not wear without judgment.
Exactly. And judgment, no matter how you think of it, is violent. You know, it's why people die in the world. It's why gay Muslims can't come out. It's why all these people who we oppress and who we, me as a straight man, I have more to do in terms of not simply activism, but inner thought process. Why do I think the way I do? Why is homophobia so real? Why is patriarchy so dominant in our mindsets? Like, why is this colonial mindset within us who aren't even white, who aren't even, the people in positions of power?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like in the West, we don't have the most amount of power, but why are we still oppressing people underneath us as men?
Yeah.
So when we do think about these issues, we hindsight is always 20/20. So you can say like, oh, I would have done this, I would have done that, but you didn't.
That's true.
And you know, you weren't there. And the women who did want to support this woman who was running was too scared of the guys. Like, when I had conversations with these guys, I heard things that were disgusting. In the sense, we were having these conversations in front of her too.
Oh, wow.
Like they were saying that, she doesn't even pray 5 times a day. How do you know that? Like, are you peeping behind the women's section? Like, are you doing what, like, you're not supposed to be doing? Like, what are you doing to prove that this is, how do you prove that I don't pray 5 times? Like, I pray 5 times a day. Because I can tell you, like, I miss Fajr all the time. I miss prayers all the time. Like, I'm not a perfect Muslim. I sin all the time. It's not a, but I'm a man. And you know, that's a free pass, and that's how we keep our power, right? So
I mean, first of all, the judgment doesn't pray 5 times a day, and then secondly, even if they don't pray 5 times a day, what's, like you said, it's a personal decision. There's no compulsion in it.
No.
So it just doesn't add up. You're right. There's a lot of bias there, especially I guess gender bias in this case.
Yeah. And what I honestly struggle with is, like, and this is me on a personal note, is like this division is so real. Like even when you said like liberal Western Muslims, I'm even thinking to myself, like, what does that even mean? You know, like, why do we have these words to draw lines when we're all the same? Like, we're all fighting for the same thing. We're all Sunni, Shia, Ahmadi, whatever we are. Like, why do we have so many disparities?
And, divisions, yeah.
You know, when someone doesn't, even I have it, right? Like, mm-hmm. even me seeing it from the woman's side, I even have it because I'm like, you guys aren't even worth talking to. Like, this isn't even a conversation I want to have, but I need to have this conversation. I'm a man. I need to, you know, I need to be immersed in this topic or else I'm just like the people who are pressing. Right? Like, it's not if I don't meet you halfway or like try to understand your viewpoint and why you think, you know, hijab is an external thing and why it needs to be this way and why you're a vocal minority and mm-hmm. people are seeing you as like the voice of reason. Like, if I can't see that, if I can't turn around and see that and talk to you on a human level, I'm doing something wrong as well. So it's on both sides.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, on this note, I often hear from people, especially with, I guess, a lot of people just leaving religions altogether, right?
No.
Right now is kind of a time where people are trying to find comfort and reason and science more. And, you know, the idea that religion is the opposite of science in many cases. So it's not just Islam, but there's a notion out there that essentially religion creates divide. And even within Islam, you mentioned there's all these subsects that we have, you know, Sunni Shia is just the start of it. Within these, we have like a ton of branches going on and everybody's got their own little ideology. But what I've noticed is it kind of relate that story back to how you started the MSA. It was a small group of people. You all got along really well. And down the road, you got a small vocal minority who did not like the way things were going and they spoke up, right? I find that happening in basically all sorts of groups, all sorts of organizations.
100%.
It's like even places that are not religious. So the US, there's a huge group of youth, I guess, that they shun religion altogether, regardless of whether they have religious parents or not. Yet on the news, like liberal, conservative, there's so much fighting going on in every single topic. You know, who should be using these bathrooms? Who should be allowed to wear these types of clothes? And, you know, it's just, it's amazing the types of things that we choose to fight each other over rather than just kind of coming together and being like, hey guys, this is really not something we should be fighting over. I find that it's just human nature to just, as soon as a group becomes large enough, there's going to be a small amount of unhappy people anywhere that want change.
I feel like it's not human nature though. It's like, we're not born like that, right? Like when we're kids, we're playing with everyone. Like, we don't care, Gali ka bacha, or like we don't care, you know, like whoever.
Yeah.
Like, when I was used to be in Pakistan, like I would play with, you know, the Masi's kids who would come to our house, and, you know, my grandma would say like, no, don't play with them. Or, like, they're dirty.
Yeah.
And I didn't care as a kid. I was like, I was eating sand. I didn't care. Like I was chilling. I was hanging out. So I don't think we're wired like that, but we are taught. We are taught to divide. We are taught to, you know, not question. And just go with the flow. But it's interesting that you bring up how interconnected this whole situation is, that it doesn't just stay within MSA. Like, this isn't a Muslim problem. This is a worldwide issue of not seeing the other side, not being understanding, objectifying people. You know, when you see someone and all you can think of is, why did they take off hijab? Like, you're objectifying them the same way that you objectify the women who aren't wearing any clothes. Like, it's the same thing. You're just
doing it from a different angle,
converting it in your head, and you're doing it from a different angle. And I think any form of comparison, good or bad, it is violent in nature, because you're doing even a good comparison is at somebody else's expense. Like, when a parent says, like, oh, this person's kid is so much better, they do laundry, but you don't do laundry. You're putting that person down. You're saying that it's hopeless for you. You're never going to do laundry, right? Put that into any context and you'll see how divisive we are taught to be when the main issue that we all are dealing with is the same. Like, we all want to belong. We all want to be part of a community and, you know, live happy lives.
So I had a really negative experience with the MSA on my university, which actually caused me to not go back. I can tell it to you right now. basically, I've already kind of mentioned my university was really out there. There wasn't a lot to do. There wasn't a lot nearby. It was definitely not a city. It was a village. It was a farmer town. And we somehow did have an MSA, a large enough community to have an MSA. And Ramadan was going on. Ramadan had just started. And it was the first fast. And I was so stressed out trying to figure out what I should eat for Sehri.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any halal place around there. And I was really strict. I was raised to be really strict about halal food. You know, you have to have Zabiya halal.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything. And I've never really fasted without doing Sehri. So I basically skipped the fast.
Yeah.
And I went later in the day, I went to the MSA. I was so upset that I didn't fast, right? And I went to the MSA, shook hands, prayed Asr, shook hands with the guys over there. There were like four or five of them in a circle. And sat down with them and I introduced myself and I told them, hey guys, is there any halal place around here? Because I couldn't find anything to eat. So basically I skipped my fast. And as soon as I said that, their expressions were, it was perceptible. There was a perceptible like...
You committed shirk.
Yeah. And I'm not going to exaggerate and say they were like, astaghfirullah, but somebody did say something like that. And there was like just head shakes, and one of them kind of gave me a little lesson. Oh yeah, there's no excuse for fasting. There's no excuse for fasting. He said it about 5-6 times between sentences. And after that little lecture, they finally told me, okay, yeah, there's a pizza place. It has like halal, you know, grinders you can get. Okay, that's all I came for, guys.
Yeah.
And maybe some friendly, put it in a friendlier way. I had such a negative experience after that. I used to see those guys walking around university all the time, and I honestly never crossed paths with them after that again. And I knew they were such a huge part of that. They were so tightly integrated in that MSA that I never really even went back. It was such a negative experience. So I did the whole Ramadan kind of by myself. Didn't even go to their events and stuff. That was, I guess it kind of relates back to your the topic that you started around, just judgment. We keep like two different faces, one face about how open and accepting Islam is for outsiders who haven't yet converted. And then once people have within your group, once you know that everybody's a Muslim, then there's a wave of just, you know, are you doing this properly? No, you're not. Let me teach it to you. Are you doing this? One after another, every single topic comes back to how I'm better than you because I'm doing things the right way, or you didn't read this. You know, there's no excuse for this and that, you know, those types of behaviors.
Yeah. And I think when... The reason why people are moving away from religion, they're moving away from religious structure in terms of how the community dynamic works. Men in power, imams leading sermons, you know, women being in the back and not talking and not voicing their opinion.
Yeah.
I think people are starting to see that there are other ways to go about being religious, and they don't want to be tied to the fact that these people who are in these positions of power, they're not really working towards your best interest. They're not really trying to build that community. And I definitely see that. Like even being in the position of power, I can see how I might have neglected some people. And you know, obviously no one is perfect, but we can always try to better ourselves and better our communities. Mm-hmm. Like we all play an integral part within the community. Like we are given one vote each or whatever it is. We are technically equals, but there's that minority or that whoever it is will say that you're not part of this group. Who said you were part of this group? Who said, oh, I don't think you can be gay and Muslim. There's no gay Muslims. There's no, you know, like Islam. Like we talk about Islamophobia. Let's talk about homophobia. Like, why are we excluding a whole group of people from our community when we are asking for the same thing from white people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're asking acceptance from the white people. We're not accepting other people. So why is this hypocrisy there? Let's not pretend like gay people don't exist. They do. They do. Mm-hmm. They're just scared to die if they come out. You know, like they're scared to get shunned from their families. There's so much interconnectedness in all of this in terms of how all these things work to keep us divided.
Right. Right.
And it's only when we look within ourselves and how we play a part in that, like me especially. From coming from that position of power, seeing what that does to a person, seeing how you can be blinded to the other side, and understanding now that, you know, it's really important to understand your place, where you do stand, because your voice is sometimes immensely greater than you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And just by being silent, you're giving a chance for those vocal minorities to take over. Mm-hmm. You're giving a chance to Trump to take presidency, when sure, you can say in private, oh, I didn't vote for him, or I didn't do this, I didn't do that. But did you do those things? Like, you didn't. Mm-hmm. You weren't there. You weren't there at Black Lives Matter, at my brown, whatever I want, mm-hmm. For my cause. So yeah, it's just the hypocrisy is within all of us, and until we question ourselves how we play a part in it, we won't really see any change.
Mm-hmm. I like that you at least make these points, knowing that there is a problem, at least, right? There's a ton of people out there who would not admit to even there being a problem. Oh yeah, everything's fine, right? We don't have any homosexuals in our community.
Yeah.
So it's okay for us to be homophobic.
Yeah, like Allah chose us, right? Like, we're the Ummah, right? We're different from other human beings. No, that's not the context of the situation. Mm-hmm. We're an Ummah in terms of a community, but we're not really the best of the best, honestly mm-hmm. speaking. We're not better than anyone else. And until I realize that, you know, like, judgment goes so deep in terms of like how we view the world, how we objectify women. Well, it all stems from the mindset that you have. And until you question that mindset, mm-hmm. just like the things that you were taught, like if I was taught by my grandma to not hang out with, you know, dirty kids, and I never questioned that, I would think those kids were dirty. Right. Even though I was playing with them, I was part of those dirty kids. I was a dirty kid too. Mm-hmm. But it's just in our mind that we just got wired this way. But until we tangle all these knots, we're not really moving forward, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't have any of the answers. Like, I don't know what is the right thing to do, what is the wrong thing to do. But I know for a fact mm-hmm. that I need to know how important my voice is and how loud my voice is in my community.
Mm-hmm. I think just the fact that we're having conversations like these, and they're happening. I mean, this is just one podcast, but just the fact that they're happening, there's a lot of these types of conversations even happening in Pakistan now.
Yeah, 100%.
Which I was surprised to learn. I was like, whoa, damn. Now they're talking about all this. So this is great. I think, I think it's good and bad in the sense that, I think I'm going off on a limb here, but basically, the fact that we have the internet kind of catalyzes a lot of these discussions around all these topics that really need to be discussed, right? At the same time, the internet can be used like really extreme people to spread their, you know, crazy agenda as well. So either way, we have like a wildfire catalyst on our hands called the internet to spread notions. It's just a crazy time to be alive.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Now, back to the lady, the person who was put in charge of the MSA after, I guess, you stepped down. What happened to her eventually?
So they held elections, and in my opinion, and this is all from the standpoint of being MSA president and where I'm coming from that perspective, she was the right person for the job.
Hmm.
And that's why I passed it down to her. Now, there was another guy who the community really, not the community, but that vocal minority really wanted, because he was the only person who was even willing to be in that position, and he was a guy.
Got it. Wow. Yeah.
When elections happened, she lost by one vote, one tiny vote, but one huge vote in a sense, because
mm-hmm.
you know, those women who did want to vote for her, they were too scared to come to elections because those guys were there. And they didn't mm-hmm. want to be harassed. They didn't want to be seen. They didn't want to be judged by those guys. So it was a fear. And I think maybe if they knew what impact they could have had, they might have came. But you know what? I don't hold it against them. I would have probably done the same thing if I was in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Being a woman is not easy. It's not easy to stand up and say, you know, I'm going to go against this guy that I know can hurt me and can harass me and can do all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a woman would never think of doing that to another man if he disagreed with her, you know?
Yeah. What was the voting setup like? Were there like ballots there? Was there privacy?
It wasn't, it was just like any other club.
Yeah.
So it was like in an open room. It wasn't really that private. Like, it wasn't anonymous, that's for sure.
Okay, got it.
We were checking IDs and stuff too, so.
Yeah.
Right. And I think even if it was anonymous, like, just the fact that someone could be in that part of campus would be terrifying for me as a woman, you know, coming into a space where I'm not wanted. You know, why would I take that step? Mm-hmm. So it does kind of, like, I do get it, but yeah, it was just that one vote that she could mm-hmm. have gotten. And you know, like, alhamdulillah, everything happens for a reason. She's still growing. She's still doing great. Great work. She's not a part of MSA anymore, obviously, but mm-hmm. like, she's thriving. You know, like, she's gonna do great things regardless. But
regardless, yeah,
we can't really lose. Like, we can't afford to lose these people in our community mm-hmm. who could have made something so big. You know, so great and inviting. Imagine, yeah, we talk about dawah, but what does dawah actually mean? It means people feel included. People want to come mm-hmm. to the masallah. So people want to come pray. People want to come to these events. And if you're not making that environment, like, what is the point of you handing out pamphlets?
Right.
Like, you know, like, all these superficial things of like, oh, do you know about Allah? Like, you don't mm-hmm. even know Allah, bro. Like,
right? I hear you. No, not to mention, like, again, we're talking about today's day and age. Anybody can look up that information on the pamphlet. You know, the basics of Islam on the internet. And actually, we're living at a time where there's so much focus on us that probably a lot of people already have. So,
and I'm not saying that dawah is bad, but I'm just saying, like, if you haven't questioned yourself and why you think certain things, mm-hmm. like, I don't think you're the best representative, because you are being an active representative of Islam in that situation. Whereas someone else would be, you know, not externally Muslim maybe, but would be willing to talk about Islam and how they live Islam, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we all live Islam differently, mm-hmm. and we need to all understand that as well, right?
Honestly, I think what would help again in this day and age to really expand our scope to have effective dawah is to have people like, from what you're describing of her, people who can relate more to non-Muslims. Or at least, you know, be able to speak their language without seeming, I don't know, without fitting into, like, necessarily stereotypes that they often might have of us in terms of personality or clothing that we choose to wear. Just to kind of show them that, hey, we're actually different colors and different personalities. That would actually be really effective if we were open to that.
Yeah, we definitely need a good marketing campaign.
Yeah, because if you think about it, I mean, it's a billion Muslims, growing past a billion, right? And how many of us are actually practicing to the degree that you would, you know, somebody like those vocal minorities would actually think they should, or wearing hijab all the time, you know, like, it's we're actually pretty different.
Yeah, and it's not just again, I want to emphasize, like, this problem isn't just within MSA. Even if you don't identify as being Muslim, like, you're still doing the same thing. Like, let's say, for example, in our Pakistani community, there's this whole issue of, like, someone who lives in the West is a burger and will never understand what being a Pakistani mm-hmm. is. And then someone who comes from Pakistan is a fob and will never understand what the Western life is. What are we doing? Like, what is... Yeah, I like burgers. Like, call me a burger, whatever. But if you're dismissing me based on the fact that I live in a different place... But I was born in Pakistan. Like, I am Pakistani. Like, mm-hmm. just because my accent isn't that great in Urdu, and, you know, I don't know the words, it doesn't mean that mm-hmm. I'm not Pakistani. And you can't dismiss me for that.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, you can't just kick you out of a group just because you chose to live somewhere else. It doesn't change your background.
And the same thing for me is, like, I can't look down on someone who's in ESL. You know, they might mm-hmm. know Urdu better than me. They might have a better... They might have a more holistic worldview than me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just by them being an ESL or them, you know, having an accent doesn't mean that mm-hmm. they're less, or they're jahil, or they're whatever these conceptions that we have in our head, right? Mm-hmm. Or even I have in my head. Like, whenever I'm talking to myself first, because I have these misconceptions. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, us as Pakistanis as a whole, We do have this issue in our community of division of fobs and burgers. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it. Like, what's the issue?
Yeah. I came to the US at age 6, right? I've actually had one guy who came to the U.S. much later than me call me Fobby. So, you know, things like, oh, yeah, man, that's a really Fobby sweater you're wearing. I was like, dude, seriously, you came here just like 4 years ago. Calm down.
Straight up.
Yeah, I've noticed our, at least in the Pakistani community, in my university life, our university life within the Pakistani community was like high school life for the non-Pakistanis, meaning our maturity level was kind of there in terms of, you know, judgments. Oh, you're too Fobby, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, this click system doesn't exist for Americans. I mean, it did in high school. They're over it.
Yeah, exactly.
In college, usually you cross those boundaries and you make all sorts of friends, but Pakistanis are still stuck in. So I found that a bit strange. I don't know if it was the same type of setup up there where you grew up, but that was happening to a huge scale. And I think it still does.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not so much in Calgary or wherever else in the West, but we do see this in terms of classism as well, of like the rich stay rich, the poor stay poor, the rich don't want to come down and see the poor at a human level. And, you know, the poor think it's unattainable to be at such an amazing place, or whatever misconception we do have of that situation. Whenever I go back to Pakistan, I definitely see that. And it is heartbreaking to see how deep this division goes. You know, it's not just a burgers and fobs issue. It's a burgers, fobs, and poor people, and non-hijabi women, and all these things that we're all just dividing on, right? Why can't we love? Why can't we just love each other for who we are, and not call each other dirty because, you know, he hangs out with those dirty kids or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, I fully agree. So you can talk a little bit more about the podcast that you started off. I listened to a few episodes of it, Muslim People Problems.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, so it is basically around these sorts of issues. Like, we have different topics which we covered. And so this was after I had left MSA, and, you know, Hadil had definitely left MSA by then. But we still wanted to have a community. So we thought, you know, if we can't find them on campus, you know, let's just put our voice out there and see if it resonates with someone. Not just see if it resonates. It will resonate with people. And people will know that they aren't alone in these circumstances. There are more people who are fighting with them and who are aware of these issues. Because it can seem kind of, you know, hopeless at times, not having people who relate to you in that sense. But yeah, we created the podcast, and I think we put out around 15 episodes. But life happens, and, you know, we got busy. But it was a good semester while it lasted. Like, we cut through a lot of topics.
Well, that's good to know. I hope you guys can still continue in one way or another, making a difference, whether it's a podcast or something else.
Yeah, I'm trying to I'm trying to focus more on my art now. In terms of, because she's a journalist, and she has a bunch of articles on Vice. She even has a poetry book out. So, like, the listeners can search her up. Her name's Hadil Abdul Nabi, and she's written, I think, around 4 or 5 articles for Vice. So she's doing great. I'm starting to get more into my art now. I'm really into, like, fashion. So, and I like creating art as well. So I kind of thought about, like, mixing the two together, and now I create art on clothing. And I'm trying to figure out how I can make that into something which I can monetize on. But for now, it's just like a hobby, and just I'm making a few pieces for my friends. But
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like, when I went into university, like, I decided, okay, I have 4 years, I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do. And I'm like, at the end of the 4 years, I still don't know what I want to do. But I think for sure I'll be in Canada for the next couple of years. I want to get into the marketing field, but I don't know where that's going to be. Either Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver. I'm not too sure. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that I do want to do like what I love, because I did go to university for a reason, right? Like I put in these 4 years to work the job that I want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I'm grappling with right now, is like there's a lot of job opportunities, but I don't want to work somewhere where it's just going to be like a mundane thing. Like I don't want to hate my job, right?
Yeah, and if it's any comfort, I'm 29 years old. I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah, when you grow up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
All right, thanks, Adil. We'll catch you later.
No problem. Thanks, man.
Take care. Bye.